Happy.
Whoa. Okay, calm down. Breathe.
I'm trying.
I said breathe.
I'm trying.
Wait a second. Are you listening to music? What?
Shut that off.
I'm not listening to music.
Fine. Just go crazy for a little while.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 14. Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Another week, more Giants talk. We're in great mood today, despite all the election drama. We're forgetting about all that. The Giants are on a three-game win streak going into a very, very nice stretch. Before we get into all the sports, you know what we got to do? We got to do the housekeeping. So, one, go follow us on Twitter, at EthanGSN. At NYG Daily, at Gotham SN. Follow all three accounts. If you've been following both of us, or all three accounts, the past, I guess, at least 6 hours, you'll know about the giveaway we're doing. That's right, an authentic Nike Jason Pierre-Paul jersey. For details on how to win that, go check our Twitter feeds. It will be my pinned tweet. And this is all tied together. Following us, the contest, and third, rate and subscribe to the podcast, guys. Every rating means a lot. Help us climb the rankings. Give us 5 stars. Say something nice about us. And that's about it. So follow, enter the contest, subscribe, and review the podcast. Let's get into some football. Weiss, I'm sick. I'm tired. We've had to deal with the election. Yet here we are on a Wednesday evening, and I'm in a pretty great mood. 3-game win streak. Bengals coming up. Prime time Monday. I'll be in the building. For anyone else that's going to be there, hit me up, let me know. Let's grab a beer. Let's start with last week's win. What are your overall thoughts? Obviously, we're going to talk bye week adjustments, Paul Perkins, Landon Collins. But let's just go over last week. Tell me what you liked, what you didn't like.
Well, I mean, it was a drama-filled win.
Oh, yeah.
I think I had a heart attack 2 or 3 times in that fourth quarter.
At least.
It was a great win. A great win for this team. A great win for this organization. A win that I think they needed more than anything. We talked about it last week with Art. We talked about if not now, when. And listen, they went in there. They got off to their hot start. You know, the big back-to-back interceptions helped. They had good field position. But the important thing about that was when they got the turnovers and they got that good field position, they scored touchdowns. They weren't kicking field goals. It really put the pressure on Carson Wentz. A lot of questionable decisions the Eagles made in that game, but, you know, you can control what you can control. They did a great job. The defense, you know, continued to make key stops in that game. They had that bend and don't break mentality. Seems like the offense finally, you know, mixed it up a bit, and we'll talk about the adjustments later, but you got to like what you see there. And so overall, it was a great win. It was a win that gives this team a 5-3 record. They haven't been 5-3 or better since 2012, which was also the last time they finished with a record above 500. So you like it. They're 3-1 at home, 5-3 record overall. And then the big thing is they're 2-1 in the division now. So that's always a plus, and they're in prime position to make the playoffs.
You hit the nail on the head right there. Huge win. At home against a pretty good Eagles team. Guys, say what you will about Carson Wentz and the wide receiver core they have over there. But at the end of the day, and I wrote about this, you had Doug Peterson, who had a rookie quarterback who he didn't expect to have starting right away, start right away. He's got an incredible defense and special teams unit. That team is tough to face, especially that front four. They run wide 9 with their defensive ends, and you got Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart having to go up against some pretty good pass rushers. So overall, great job, great win. Getting points off turnovers was huge, especially early, and I'm sure we'll talk about this because I want to talk about the kind of NFC East picture in general after we go over last week. With these young rookie quarterbacks, and this is what has benefited Dak Prescott so far, you need to force them to make big plays. And when you force these young guys to make big plays, they will 100% make mistakes. May not be every time, but all you need is one costly mistake. And they put pressure on Carson Wentz early by not only picking him off, but getting 7 points each time they did. So that was huge. Let's start on the defensive side of the ball, because I think they played a great game. You brought up the bend but don't break defense, which is something that we've been talking about all season. To me, it's still frustrating to watch this defense because they have so much talent. They're probably going to end up one of the top units in the league. They already are in some stats, not in turnovers and sacks and interceptions, but in terms of points allowed, and their run defense is incredible. Right. But when they get pressure on quarterbacks, good things happen. Yes. Unfortunately, the only time they do get pressure on quarterbacks is when they rush more than four. Now, we saw on the last drive when Carson Wentz was threatening, when they were down five, they sent an extra man four times in a row, and they forced him to make mistakes. They made him uncomfortable in the pocket. They made him run outside to his right, which, if you noticed, that's what happened on at least one of the first two interceptions that he threw. He threw him when he was on the move. So you got to make these young guys uncomfortable in the pocket. And that's what they did on the final drive. I just wish I could see a little bit more of it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively, we've been, you know, harping at this. I think they're winning a lot of these battles just based on their talent.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of it is also, and I don't want to make excuses as to why the defense hasn't kind of been stronger per se, but I think a lot of it is, you know, they have a young safety back there with Andrew Adams, so I think they're still trying to be a little I won't say conservative, but a little, you know, weary of not, you know, going all out at it. But, you know, they did get pressure on the quarterback. They got to, like, I think they had seven quarterback pressures on Wentz. Obviously nobody wants to hear that anymore. They did get two sacks on both of those interceptions. You saw pressure on Wentz that made him uncomfortable on the last drive. Like you said, they were blitzing and they were getting there. And even on that last throw, it seemed like the pressure was in Wentz's face, and he settled for a bad throw. So I agree with you that defensively, you would like to see the stacks start to pile up. You'd like to see them be able to stop people. Overall, I think the one thing that if you want to take away, it's a negative, is the amount of yards they were giving up to the tight end. And surprisingly, coming into this game, the Giant defense was playing pretty well versus tight ends. I don't know the exact stat off the top of my head, but they were, you know, among the league best, actually, in terms of tight ends yards allowed per game. So it is kind of, you know, Zach Ertz is a good tight end, and he was able to, you know, get open. But going forward, you'd like to see them make some adjustments, and so tight ends aren't going to be as easy to beat them. And looking ahead, if you look ahead to their next opponent, they have a much better receiving core. They have a tight end capable of doing what Zach Ertz did. So you're going to have to be very prepared in that aspect and know that they're not going to be facing the same receiving core as they faced last Sunday against Philadelphia, where they were able to get away with some of the things that they did.
Yeah, you hit it. They got Zach Ertz coming up. Tyler Eifert coming up on the schedule. One of the best tight ends in the league. One of the probably the second best red zone tight end threat in the league. The dude is absolutely incredible, especially when you take into account that he's got AJ Green to take away some coverage. And they've got Gio Bernard, who's a pretty good running back as well. The Giants' defense, not just inside the red zone, but short yardage as well. Doug Peterson, going into this game against the Giants, was 5 for 5 when it came to fourth down conversions. It was clear he got cocky, and you can't get cocky in short yard situations against this Giants front four, because say what you will about the number of sacks that they have, but Damon Harrison and Jonathan Hankins are two of the best interior defenders in the NFL. That run defense is unbelievable, especially Olivier Vernon and JPP on the end.
Yep. And then I was just going to say, on that fourth and one, listen, if you're going to try to get a yard, you better come with something better than Darren Sproles.
Absolutely.
You can't come at those guys fourth and one with Darren Sproles. There's absolutely no way. I knew when they had fourth and one, they had Sproles in the backfield. I said, if they run this ball, they're not getting it. You can give us the ball right now.
Yep, and you got to love that. Giants have the best NFL red zone defense only allowing touchdowns on 39.3% of their opponents' trips inside the 20-yard line. That's awesome. One other tidbit just about the upcoming stretch, because it's something that we'll talk about. I just want to touch on this. The combined record of the next three Giants opponents, 5-19-1. So, listen, guys, very winnable stretch. And Weiss, if you want to touch on this right now and we can get the humiliation out of the way, I predicted the Giants to lose to the Eagles this week. So feel free to shun me right now. But I did, however, pen a very, very, very optimistic blog earlier this week about how I thought the Giants were going to win their next three. So that either bodes very well or very poorly. Because
what I want to say, I'm not going to get on you a lot about that. I'll let that one slide.
That's very nice of you. I appreciate that.
But I want you to give the Giant offensive line some credit, specifically Bobby Hart. I think he deserves. He played a really good game. He was going up against Brandon Graham, and Brandon Graham didn't get a lot of pressures on Eli Manning. And there was a lot of times that they were doing max protect, and Eli Manning had time in that pocket. So I think the Giant offensive line deserves credit, even when they lost Justin Pugh, who is a big loss. Luckily, it's not season ending, but it is a big loss. They stuck together and they managed their way through the game and got the win. And every time the Eagles scored, if you remember, when it was 14-3, then the Eagles made it 14-10, and the Giants scored, made it 21-10. Then it was 21-10 for a while. Then in the start of the second half, they made it 21-17. Then the Giants went right back down the field and made it 28-17, and they were able to hold Philly to those last two field goals. So I think the offensive line deserves some credit. We didn't mention them yet, so I'll give them the kudos. Seems like I'm the only one that gives the offensive line credit these days.
Well, here's the problem. It's whenever you do give them credit, they come out and they lay an absolute stinker the next week.
That is true. So,
which is why I'm hesitant to be positive about the team, because it seems like every time I have something negative to say, whether it's about Eric Flowers or whether just the team in general, something good happens. So maybe I should have predicted they go 0-3 for the next stretch.
Maybe you should predict him to lose.
Especially because I'm going to the game. And the last game I went to was actually the Redskins game where they blew it. So I apologize, folks, in advance in the event that you guys want to place the blame on me for me being in the building for Monday night in the event that they lose, which I don't think they will. But if they do lose, 100%, you can send the blame my way. Tweet me, get mad at me. Just, you know, keep the threats civil. All right. I guess that's all we have to say about just general thoughts in the game. I wrote down a few specific things. Let's talk Paul Perkins for a second. At the beginning of the year, he was a big pump the brakes candidate for me because fifth round pick, we really didn't know what we were seeing. Sure, he looked good on tape, but it's kind of, I want to see this guy get into the game. And as the season went on, more and more, I was a Rashad Jennings fan. Okay, I just want to put that out there. I think he's underappreciated. I don't think that his style of running kind of meshes with this kind of offensive line. I do think that he can, however, and this may shock some people, and this may be a hot take, I think he could be a very good passing down back for the Giants, not only because his knowledge of the protection, but because I feel like the defenses don't really consider him a passing down back, and when he gets into space, he can make people miss, and he is pretty good after the contact in space. Running into, you know, Justin Pugh's ass every single play, not great. And I said last week, if you're going to defeat this Eagles defensive line when they're going wide nine like that, it's going to come down to a running back that's got quick feet that can really shift quickly, change directions, and then find the hole and burst through it. And that guy hasn't been Rashad Jennings, and that's totally fine. He's a nice veteran presence, and he can still contribute positively to the team. However, Perkins had some incredible runs. He was finding space that we haven't seen any other running back on the team find behind this offensive line. And that was after Justin Pugh, arguably one of the best left guards in the NFL, came out with an injury. Paul Perkins deserves to be this team's bell cow. He deserves to be out there for a majority of the snaps. And I think he's talented enough. And it's gotten to the point in the season where you've had your bye week. The kid's gotten enough snaps. He should feel comfortable in the offense. Just let him rip, and then let him get the carries he deserves.
You know, I'm with you. I was a Paul Perkins fan. Loved the pick from the get-go. I think you're on the right track when you say he deserves more carries. I mean, he had the same amount of carries as Rashad Jennings. I think you're going to see his workload increase. I think he's more fit for the offense. But in terms of Rashad Jennings, what he brings to the table, Rashad Jennings can still play. I mean, this is not a Larry Donnell situation where we need Larry Donnell off the field. Rashad Jennings is the number one running back in terms of pass protection. He is a really good in pass protection, and he deserves to be on the field. I think you continue to ease Paul Perkins in. I think you'll see probably an increased workload next week. You'll see him on the field more and more. In terms of him becoming the full-time back, in terms of giving him the ball 20 to 25 times, it's really tough for me to say right now. I still think he needs to do a little bit more in pass protection to earn that. But I think we're headed that way. I think we all see it. The youth movement is in full effect, not just in terms of the running back position, but if you look in the receiving core, Victor Cruz went down with injury. But even before that, you were seeing Roger Lewis, an undrafted rookie, coming in and getting snaps. So I think the youth movement for this team is in full effect. We saw little Jarrell Adams. We saw Larry Donnell get benched for Will Tye. So we're seeing where it's headed. I just think we need to let the process play itself out. There's a slogan that I'm giving to Giants fans this week, because there was a lot of Giants fans who didn't like Landon Collins last year. And it's a simple thing. Trust the process. Trust the Giant process. Let this thing play out. Let these young guys grow. And in terms of Perkins, I'm with you. I think eventually that's where we're headed. You see where we're going with this. But as far as these next couple of games, you continue to ease him in. You continue to build his confidence up and work him in as eventually the full-time back. Similar to what they did in 2007 with Ahmad Bradshaw.
Sure. I don't know how applicable that hashtag is to this team right now. I understand the sentiment you're going, but just when I hear trust and process, I think a miserable Sixers team where it's just like, yeah.
Yes, yeah, but I'm talking, this is in terms of the young players.
No, I get it.
The drafting, just trust the way this process is going. This team has a lot of young talent. It has a lot of young talent on them. And I think even though I know a lot of people say you got to be a win-now approach with the quarterback, and I cold-heartedly agree. And I think the organization sees it that way too. But I think that it's more so also about the fact that you got to continue to build this young talent, to develop these young players that you have, and just trust that process. Mm-hmm. Just trust the process. I like where this team is headed, not just this year, but for years to come. I like the young talent here.
Sure. You brought up Roger Lewis. He's someone I want to talk about because something we both realized and pointed out was the fact that he was getting snaps even before Cruz left with injury. Now, Cruz's injury doesn't seem that serious, but Lewis is a dynamic guy. He was someone that we were big fans of early on in the season when he was brought in. And I feel like this is a thing that not a lot of people know. Outside of whatever character concerns, I say in quotes, because I think he was like accused and acquitted of rape in high school, not even college.
Right.
He played in Bowling Green, and his senior year, he put up, and I'm going to look this up to confirm, but I believe he put up 1,600 yards and 16 touchdowns in his senior year. Yeah, 1,544 yards, 16 touchdowns. Now, okay, this is Bowling Green, this is Maction, this is high-flying spread offenses. There's no doubt that the talent is there. It was always about learning the system. He's a talented guy. He put up the numbers. Now that he's being eased into the system, this is a potential long-term solution for someone like Victor Cruz, who just turned 30. And you love what you're seeing out of it. We agreed he was talented earlier. He is now getting more accustomed to the system. We're past the halfway point. It's past the bye week. He's learning. He's getting the snaps. And you're right. You gotta like some of this young talent on the team. And I think he played well. You want to talk Jarrell Adams for a little bit?
Sure. To add on to your Roger Lewis thing, I definitely think that you're going to see him more and more in this offense. I think as much as we love Victor Cruz, what we're getting out of Roger Lewis is basically showing us that we can't keep this guy on the bench. He deserves to be on the field. With that said, I still think, again, you're going to ease this in. You're going to ease Lewis into things. I don't think we're going to completely shun Victor Cruz out. In terms of the tight end position, this is where I think the shunning has happened. I think Larry Donnell played zero snaps. I don't think we're going to see Larry Donnell as a starter again unless injury. I think what we're seeing, I think Will Tye has passed him on the depth chart. I think Jarrell Adams has now become the number two. And I think Larry Donnell will be used on rare occasions when they need a big body tight end in the red zone to throw that fade to. And that's if Ben McAdoo is feeling that play. They ran a fade in the last game, but we saw interesting formation with those three wide receivers, and Beckham ran the fade and he caught the touchdown. So I don't know where Larry Donnell fits into this, but what I do get the sense of is that it's a Will Tye and Jarrell Adams show going forward.
Here's my thing, and you bring up a good point with the fade that we saw to Beckham. If you are in the red zone and you want to run the fade, you don't necessarily need a guy who's 6'5", 6'6", when you have wide receivers with verticals like Odell and Shepard, because cornerbacks are supposed to be smaller players.
You're spot on. And you know, the thing is, Jarrell Adams isn't necessarily a he's 6'5".
He's 6'5".
You know, so he's a big body receiver. It's just a matter of continuing to developing him and get him, you know, acclimated with what they want to do. But in terms of that big body tight end, yeah, Larry Donnell is that. But Jarrell Adams is only, a couple inches shorter than him. So he can still run that fade in when you need that big body receiver. It's just in terms of how you develop him and get him ready and him having the trust in him that he can be in the right spot in this offense. So I really don't see a spot where Larry Donnell could come back in. I don't know. I'm not saying that he won't play another down, but in terms of the lead bell cows at the tight end, I think it's the Will Tye and Roger Lewis show. And if you look, Will Tye, 4 catches, 33 yards. Jarrell Adams, 3 catches, 24 yards. You combine that, you got 7 catches for 57 yards. So you like what you got out of the tight end position. I think it's more of a tight end by committee now. And if you're getting that production, you're okay with it.
Yeah, not only that, I think, at least for me, when it comes to the tight end, I like to see a tight end that's going to be able to exploit the lack of speed of a linebacking core. And, you know, that's something that Larry Donnell couldn't do because he lacked any sort of yards after catch ability. Tripped, fumbled, did front flips. I mean, you guys know the drill already. So as long as, you know, size doesn't really matter to me that much, as long as you can expose the linebackers with good routes or a little bit of speed. And Jarrell Adams can do that. So
he can block, too.
And he can, something Larry Donnell definitely can't do.
And you know, another thing, Will Tye broke more tackles against the Eagles than Larry Donnell has done in his whole career.
Yep. It's unbelievable. All right. Let's talk about probably our favorite player currently on the Giants. And that's right, I'm talking about future Defensive Player of the Year, Landon Collins. How about Landon Collins? Only player in the league to lead his team in sacks, interceptions, and tackles. He's having what Janoris Jenkins, I believe, described as one of the best seasons he's ever seen out of a safety in the NFL. The dude's in absolute beast mode right now. Roll Tide. Go Landon Collins, second year. He's someone that I wasn't necessarily down on last year, considering the circumstances. He's someone I always felt was playing out of position. He was strong safety playing a free safety role. Not only was he playing a free safety role, he was playing it next to Brandon Merriweather as a rookie. So that's never going to end up well. This year, he is acclimated to the NFL. He had, to start the season, Darian Thompson. He's got Burhey. Now he's got Andrew Adams, who has stepped up big time, which was a great find by Reese. The dude is balling out, not just in the box where he excels, but his coverage skills have improved as well. He's unbelievable. He should be in serious consideration for Defensive Player of the Year, and he has been, obviously, this team's defensive MVP so far.
Yeah, what's been so impressive outside of the numbers with Landon Collins for me is he's been on the field for every play except like six or seven.
I think it was 3 snaps.
You're probably right. I mean, so he's always on the field, and he's making plays. You see the improvement. He's only 22 years old. He's younger than Darian Thompson. I mean, this guy's a young guy, and he said today, I mean, he's just getting his feet wet in this league. I think he's going to be a great safety. To me personally, there's not another strong safety that I'm taking over Landon Collins right now. I think he's the best strong safety in the league. In terms of Defensive Player of the Year, I think he could put himself in the conversation if this team continues to win. I think if they continue to win, he continues to make plays, I think you'll see him put himself in that conversation for the Defensive Player of the Year. I think there's a lot of politics involved in that award, or all these awards, that the team has to be winning for them to be a candidate for MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and so on and so forth. I love what I see from Landon Collins, but I also love what I see from Janoris Jenkins. Look, I'm going to admit, I wasn't high on the signing. I didn't like the Janoris Jenkins signing. I thought that he was a very undisciplined corner. But here he comes in, and he's much more disciplined. He is a borderline shutdown corner. He is making play after play, not only, you know, on defense, but he's also doing it in special teams as well. And you like what you see from him. You like what you see from the secondary. We talked about Andrew Adams, again, a guy that I think is making the most of the opportunity. I don't think that he is going to give up the starting spot to Nat Burhey. I think it's going to be the Adams and the Collins show going forward. And you got to like what you see. It's unfortunate what happened with Darian Thompson. I would have loved to see Thompson and Landon Collins back there, because I think Thompson is a true free safety, more so than Adams and Burhey. But you got to like what you see from the secondary as a whole, and especially in Landon Collins. I mean, he is playing on another level right now, and it's definitely showing when you see the improvements in this defense. Not so the new acquisitions, but the improvement of some of these guys like Landon Collins.
Yeah, you brought up Janoris Jenkins. When he came to the Giants, my dad asked me, he said, all right, what do I need to know about Jenkins? And what I told him was, he's going to make some incredible play that'll have you jumping up and down, running around, and then he's going to do something so boneheaded that you're just going to want to jump off a bridge. And so far, I've been wrong, because he's been playing, and I think that one of the defensive coaches, or he came out and said it, he's been playing disciplined football. You don't see the jackrabbit of the Rams that's going to go out there and try to be just some absolute ball hawk. His technique is almost flawless. He's one of the best cover corners in the NFL. He can cover ones, twos. We haven't seen him play the slot a lot, but I'm sure he could do that. He's been playing, making big plays on special teams. He's been unbelievable. He's been making big plays. You love what you're seeing out of him. You know, and it's beneficial for, you know, everyone on the defense when you have a guy who can do that, considering he's been a first-round pick on Eli Apple, who has looked good at some points. This past week, he looked terrible. He actually got benched for Sensabaugh and Wade. But the fact that you're afforded this luxury of having two pretty much shutdown corners, I'm going to include DRC as a shutdown corner because he's played very well this season, means you don't even need to rush your rookie guy in there or play him out of position. So, you know, kudos to the entire secondary. They've been awesome. And I don't think that there's any doubt that they're one of the top units in the league.
And you know what the funny thing is? A reporter had asked Janoris, he says, you know, you're playing more discipline this year. You know, is it coaching? What is it? And he just simply said, look, I got an offense that can score points, although they've been struggling a little bit. I got a quarterback, I got an offense that can score points. I don't need to jump routes. So I read that quote and I'm like, oh, you know, that makes sense. You know, I get it. So hey, you know, you like what you're seeing. The return investment is great on all the free agent signings. And there's a one guy we're not talking about, but he's played exceptionally well. And that's Keenan Robinson.
Yes, absolutely.
Keenan Robinson is a journeyman veteran. Came in here, was in Washington, was dealing with injuries. He's come in. So far, he's been healthy. He's been playing at a high level. You see him taking over one of the starting jobs at linebacker. His coverage skills is good. Tackling is a little iffy, but he made a game-changing play was able to get Darren Sproles out of bounds, because the Eagles didn't get no points on that drive. So he's been playing really well. You hope he can stay healthy, but this is one of the guys that, you know, who's on a one-year deal, but you want him to be back next year for the Giants.
Yeah, no, definitely shout out to the linebacking core, who's pretty much gone unnoticed, which I guess is a good thing, because the defensive line has been so good in run defense, and the secondary, obviously, we just talked about, has been so good that I feel like sometimes these guys go unnoticed, not necessarily that they're the heroes of the defense, but they've been playing good enough to not be necessarily exposed. And this this coming week, this Monday, is going to be an incredible challenge for them, having to cover Tyler Eifert. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I agree on with your point on Keenan Robinson, especially considering that I was very high on Casillas coming into the season, and he's played well, absolutely. And I think because of that, Keenan Robinson has gone, you know, somewhat unnoticed. So
And another thing is, I think overall the defense is playing together. Look, there's weak spots on this defense. There's no doubt about that. This is not the best defense in football. But collectively, they're playing really well, and they're hiding some of the weaknesses that are there, and there are weaknesses there. So you got to like what you're seeing. They're only going to get better as the season goes on. I think, you know, the best is still yet to come for this defense.
Yeah, I think so too. When you look at last year, you had players come out after the season and say, hey, it really took us until week 8 to finally understand Spagnuolo's defense. And you started to see some sort of improvements there, but obviously with the injuries, it was tough. Now you have a bunch of guys who were in that system last year who come in right now getting it. And the guys that came in, for the most part, are part of the $200 million defense. You know, they're professionals. They're best in the game. You got Vernon. You got Janoris Jenkins. You got Snacks Harrison. You know, these are guys that are going to be able to pick up a new system very quickly. So, you know, I have been very critical of Spags, as well as Jerry Reese kind of throwing money at a problem. But, hey, so far it's worked. So what else am I going to say about it?
And I think here's the one thing I will say, and this will be the end of it. In terms of Darian Thompson, you talk about Spags' defense. This is a difficult defense to learn. There's a lot of stuff you got to learn. But a rookie third-round pick came in here, caught on so quickly.
Stole a starting job. Yeah.
Listen, a lot of guys are really upset he's on IR, but this is going to be a special player. I mean, this is going to be a really good player. He's a smart football player, and he's a perfect combo with Landon Collins back there. So you get him healed up, and you get him ready for 2017. But I really like Darian Thompson. I don't think people should get upset about – I mean, obviously it sucks he's on IR, but this isn't no, you know, what could have been. This is going to be a good player. It's going to be a really good player for the Giants.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm very high on him. I was very high on him. I will be moving forward. I do want to touch on one more quick thing before we move on. Nat Burhe, I like him. Great player. He's got to change up his style of play. I know that he likes to use the rocket emoji on Twitter, and it's all cute and everything. Well, you know what? It's all cute until you have multiple concussions and you're out of the league in 3 years. So, you know, he's got to work on his tackle technique and his hitting technique just for, you know, not only his sake, but so that he could stay healthy, so that the Giants have depth at the safety position. So, something I'd like to see him work on moving forward. Great player. And that's all I got to say about that. All right. Let's talk about the NFC East real quick, because the Giants are in the driver's seat for a wild card spot. But I'm probably going to be kicking myself for this. I'm pretty optimistic that they're going to catch the Cowboys and win the division somehow. People may be asking how. Cowboys are on a roll. They are on a roll. Dak's been good. Zeke's good. That offensive line is amazing. The defense is underrated. Per NFL research, Cowboys have faced the NFL's easiest strength of schedule this season. Their opponents are 23-40-2 for a 36.9 win percentage. That is atrocious. I don't know what the Giants' opponents' win percentage is. It's way higher. I believe it's in the 40s. And the win percentage coming up, I read it earlier, their opponents are like 6-19-1. So Giants need to take advantage of this three-game stretch. They need to win all three games, because if it comes down to it, there's no way the Cowboys win out. There's just no way. They're not going to go 15-1. The Giants aren't going to finish 13-3 either. Okay, the Cowboys are going to stumble a bit. The Giants need to take advantage of these games right now, because if they play the Cowboys later in the season and they win, that game is going to be monumental, because it'll give them the 2-0 tiebreaker for the season, if that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. So I think, you know, they're in the driver's seat. They got an easy schedule. They have the advantage of having a two-time Super Bowl MVP quarterback as opposed to a rookie. They got no quarterback drama, whether or not Romo comes back to replace Dak. They got probably the best defense of anybody else in the NFC East. I'm optimistic, and I want you to either talk me down or agree with me. Go.
You know, I'm with you in a sense that they could catch the Cowboys. The thing is that we talk about the next three games, and yes, you're right. If you look at the Cowboys' next three games at Pittsburgh, the Ravens, and the Redskins, that's no cakewalk. I actually have them losing at Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh is desperate for a win, at home. I think Pittsburgh will win that game. For the Giants, I mean, the Bengals is a really tough game. It's another team that's desperate for a win. But after that, I mean, you got Chicago at home and at the Browns. And look, there's no easy game in the NFL, or easy win in the NFL, I should say. But if you're looking for an easy win, you got at the Browns right there. So they should win these next three games and put themselves at 8-3. And if you look at the Cowboys at Pittsburgh, Ravens, Redskins, let's say they go 2-1 in that stretch, they come out of it, 9-2, then they go at Minnesota before that showdown with the Giants. So you want to be in that one game out range. I think that's where the Giants are hoping to be by the time they get to that December 11th game in New York, that I think could be for the division. But who knows? I think the most important thing for the Giants is they just have to win their games that they're supposed to win. See, we were going into the Eagles game, and there was a lot of people that doubted that the Giants could win this game, and now when you look at this game against the Bengals, they're expected to win this game because of how they've played the season. So now when you're expected to win, how do they respond? How do they win these games? They've played well at home. You want to see that continue. I don't think they're out of the NFCs by a long shot. I do think it's going to be hard. I do think the Cowboys have played well. One note I will point out to you, and I researched this today. The five teams that the Giants have beaten have a combined 22 wins and 18 losses. The seven teams the Cowboys have beaten have a combined 18 wins, 37 losses. Let's take out that Week 1 Giants-Cowboys game. The four teams that the Giants have beaten have a combined, 15 wins to 18. So four in four games, you're looking at that the Giants have won, you're looking at 15 wins versus 18 in seven wins. So the schedule has obviously been in the Cowboys' favor, but going into the second half of the schedule, the Giants should take advantage of these games that they have coming up where they should win and should set themselves up for a big showdown with the Cowboys December 11th.
No, that's a really, really great point you brought up by taking out the Cowboys' wins in terms of the Giants' win percentage. I didn't even think about that. You got a Bengals team desperate for a win. You've also got a team that is poorly coached and undisciplined, and quite frankly, they can be dirty sometimes. So for the Giants, I think it's just going to come down to playing smart football, and that's that's about it.
It's about to play smart football, play to your advantage. There's got to be that next man up mentality in this game. We're going to be without Justin Pugh. We might be without Victor Cruz as well, so it's a good stage for some of these young guys to step up and hopefully make a name for themselves. Can we talk about the offensive line for a second?
Yeah.
I know Brett Jones has played well. He played well in that game. But don't you think sticking or trying to put Will Beatty at that left guard spot would be a little better than going with Jones against the Bengals?
I don't know, man. That's tough just because. And was Beatty even dressed for this game?
No, he was not.
I don't know. To me, if he's not even playing well enough in practice to be dressed, I know he's a veteran, but you're going to stick him at a position that's not his natural position, he's not even good enough to be dressed. I know Brett Jones isn't the ideal solution. Obviously, Justin Pugh is one of the top left guards in the league, and quite frankly, I think a lot of Giants fans underappreciate him a lot. And that's not to say... This is not to say that Brett Jones didn't play well. He played well. I wouldn't be optimistic on him totally keeping it up. I mean, he's a center from the CFL. I just don't know. I'm going to trust the Giants coaching staff enough to recognize whether or not Will Beatty is ready. That's going to be my argument.
That's fine. I could also see him potentially, even though he's played okay, possibly moving Bobby inside and bringing Newhouse in at right tackle. I could see
that too.
But I think going into this Bengals game, I think Jones might be the starter coming out of the gates.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that because he did play well. If he has been practicing in that position all week, then let him have it. Just fans should be aware that the left side, when it comes to a pass rush, might be a little weak. So, that's basically it. Any other comments, things to look out for the Bengals game?
No, I think you talked about it. I think you nailed everything. I think the chippiness is going to be key. I think they're going to try to rattle some of the guys offensively. You just have to keep your composure. And let's get this win, man. When was the last time we won on Monday night?
It's been a while. The Giants have not been great in prime time.
At home on Monday night. At home on Monday night.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's been a very long time.
I know they won at Miami last year. But I was trying to think of the last. Was it that game against the Vikings in 2013? It was our first one of the season when Josh Freeman was a quarterback.
Damn. All right.
And they've had a home Monday night game every year since then.
Yep, not great. All right, you want to do some questions?
Let's do it.
All right. Judas asks, is there a concern about Darian Thompson now gone for the year? Or are you guys confident with Berkey and Adams? We touched on it earlier. It obviously sucks that Thompson's gone for the year because we were both very high on him, and I think he is the perfect complement, like you mentioned, to Landon Collins. He's a ball hawk, got great vision, got great speed. It's going to hurt, but you know, Adams has played well. If Berkey stays healthy, I'm pretty confident in that secondary.
Yeah, I would have loved to see Darian Thompson out there. If you watched that week one game against Dallas, he was awesome. He made some plays that really, really made your mouth watery when you think about the Giant defense. So it is tough. It was really high on this guy coming out. A lot of good stuff about him in the preseason in terms of him picking up on the defense. But I think they'll be okay. I think you like what you see from Andrew Adams. Now Berhe's coming back slowly, so I think they'll be okay. And I think Landon Collins also played really, really well. So I think they'll be able to manage with the secondary that they have collectively.
All right, Jeff Kaiser. What was your favorite McAdoo adjustment? Was it not playing Goofy Larry? Was it the increase in snaps for Adams and Perkins? Or was it different wide receiver sets? I'll let you start.
For me, it was. I think I wouldn't call this more of an adjustment because I think we saw this coming, but it was more so playing the younger guys. I think you throw them out there, you see what they can do, you play them to their strengths, you call plays for them that they can take advantage of. So I liked McAdoo in that sense. I also liked a couple times they added an extra lineman, the way they set up the receivers. I really have no complaints about anything that McAdoo did in terms of adjustment wise. I liked all of it, and quite frankly, they needed it when you talked about how bad this offense was.
Yeah. For me, it was probably the different three wide receiver sets. If McAdoo is going to be stubborn and in terms of, you know, refusing to walk away from the 11 personnel set, which is fine because you don't really have the depth at tight end or running back or what have you, then at least get creative with the wide receiver sets. We saw it on the fade to Beckham in the end zone. You know, we saw Roger Lewis getting here. You know, I like what I'm seeing. So if he's going to keep getting creative and he refuses to move away from the 11 personnel, then I would say it's the creativity he's shown with the three wide receiver sets. So that's what I'm going to choose.
And here's one more thing about the adjustments now is now everything is on tape for the Bengals to see. You know, it's not going to be coming in like it did in the Eagles game. So now it's how does McAdoo install more adjustments? And now I think people see, okay, if Dwayne Harris is in the game, they're probably going to run the football. Dwayne Harris is probably going to be blocking. So how do you make those adjustments? How do you change things up? And that's going to be more important for McAdoo going forward. You like what you saw from the Eagles game, but you want to see how they adjust to the adjustments made to their adjustments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I guess you. All right, Mike in New Haven. Are you worried about a breakout game for the Bengals defense, especially now with a weekend offensive line? No, not really. They got playmakers on that defense for sure, but they're very mistake prone. They take dumb penalties. You know, last year the offensive line for the Giants was terrible, and McAdoo's offense was all about getting the ball out of Eli's hands quickly. So, you know, if the defense does start to get to Eli, I'm sure McAdoo will make the adjustment, get some more quick plays out there. So I'm not particularly terrified about the Bengals' defense.
And I think I'm more worried about a Bengals breakout game in general. I think this team is a little underrated. I know they've had a rough start, but they also had a tough schedule to open the season. I think the undisciplined this year, it's there. I was there last year as well, but they still won, you know, what, 11 games and made the playoffs. So I think the talent is there for the Bengals to kind of have, I don't want to call it a breakout game, but a game where they really, show what they're made of and kind of get their season going. They could actually be playing for a tie of first place in the AFC North, depending on what happens on Sunday. So they have that extra motivation there. So I am a little worried. I think this game is a tougher game for the Giants than the Eagles game, just because I think the Bengals are more talented and match up well against the Giants. So I there is a little fear there that, you know, the Bengals could finally play to their full potential and get the Giants here. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Next question, Michael Miano. Can the Giants contain the weapons of Green, Hill, Bernard, and Eifert? Hill and Bernard for sure. I mean, I'm not worried about the run. Eifert is going to be tough, especially in the red zone. I don't think they have a linebacker that's going to be able to cover him. He's just too big, too fast, too versatile. In terms of Green, I think you just need to leave him on an island with Janoris Jenkins and let them battle it out all game. Green's been unbelievable this year. He's been dominant, as he has been for the past few years. And I feel like he is consistently one of the most underappreciated, under-talked about wide receivers in the league because he's not, like, flashy. You know, it's definitely going to be tough. It's going to be a challenge for the defense, despite how well they've played. Aside from Eifert, I can't really say I'm that worried.
I think their offense has a lot of weapons. I think you're seeing a little bit of Tyler Boyd, the way he's kind of developing in the season. So, I am a little worried in terms of the Bengals' offense. I do think coming out of the bye week, I do think they're a little underrated. You talked about A.J. Green. I think he's played as well as any receiver in the league so far. Eifert, he can beat you. I think we both agree he's better than Zach Ertz.
Yeah.
And that's not taking anything away from Ertz, though. But it's going to be a good test for the Giants. See how they respond in this game. I think if they win this game, I'll feel a lot better about the season going forward if they win this game. I felt better after the Eagles game, but if they can come out of this game with a win, I'll be ecstatic and I'll be a lot more confident in what they can do going forward.
Absolutely agree. Let's see. Can we put Landon Collins in bubble wrap to keep him away from this injury bug that the New York Giants safeties can't resist? I wish. How worried are you about the matchup between Brett Jones or whoever plays left guard versus Geno Atkins? I don't know. I'll let you start. I said earlier I wasn't that worried, but the left side of the line could be a problem.
It could be. Again, this is Jones's first career start, so I do expect some struggles. Geno Atkins, although had a quiet season so far, he still is a premier interior guy. It's really going to come down to how the Giants adjust to it. You know, get the football out their hands early. The secondary, the Bengals has not played well, so how you get the ball out, you know, how you're able to protect the quarterback, I think that's going to be key. I think you're going to see a little help from Weston Richburg to Jones as well. So we'll see. I mean, I think it's definitely possible that we see Jones struggle, but I'm hoping that he can play well enough that he's not a liability in there.
Sure, I agree. All right, I think that's it for the questions. You got any final thoughts, comments, questions?
No, you got. Yeah, I think you kind of hinted. You got the Giants on Monday night.
I got the Giants on Monday night. I'll be there. Give me. Let's see. Give me 24-20.
What did I say last week? I said 27-23, or did I say 27-20? I got to go back and watch that. But if I said 27-23, I was pretty close.
You're damn close, yeah.
I'll go Giants. I think they'll finally score over 30 points this season.
Wow. Okay. I like that.
I'll say 31 Giants, Bengals. 27.
Wow, high scoring, huh?
Yeah, I think you're going to see both offenses. So I mean, the Bengals are coming out of a bye week, and they've moved the ball well offensively, I think. So I think they'll be able to move the ball on the Giants. In terms of, can the Giants outscore them? And I think they will. I think it's going to be a big night. They're going to be putting Coughlin, McCourcy, and Tuck into the Ring of Honor. So it's going to be a special night there. Hopefully the Giants can pull this one out. 6-3 is a lot better than 5-4, right?
Way better. Infinitely
it
better.
It sounds better, looks better, and it is better. And I think the Giants pull this one out. I'm going to go Giants 31-27.
All right, for you degenerates out there, the Giants are currently 2-point favorites in Vegas with an over-under of 47 points. So make of that what you will. I was just looking at it, so I figured I'd throw it out there. I don't really.
Essentially, a 1-point underdog.
Yeah,
because they're at home.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's all I really got to say about it. If you're listening, you're going to be at the game. You want to meet up? Tweet me. I probably won't be tailgating because I'm going to be going straight from work. But we can grab a beer at halftime for sure. All right. That's about it, guys. Rate, subscribe, contest JPP jersey. Follow us on Twitter. You know the drill. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
Peace.
Peace.